Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Iowa Wisconsin Politics looks at this week in the Capitol in politics. Wish I was there. First Lady Tenet Walker, thanks. Foster care parents, and it's Foster Care Awareness Month. And State Public Defender Kelly Thompson personally asked Supreme Court justices to raise the reimbursement rates for court-appointed defense lawyers, saying it hasn't been raised in decades, saying it's a dire problem. And finally, Paul Ryan thanks Wisconsin Republicans at the state convention for 20 years of their support. Wish I was there.
Fostering Future's goal is to transform systems and organization that impact the well-being of children and families in Wisconsin through the implementation of trauma-informed care. Principles like safety, trust, choice, collaboration, and empowerment are the foundation of our work. Today we recognize Foster Care Awareness Month. We know that trauma-informed care provides hope. While it might seem that the odds might be stacked against some of our youth, it is important to recognize that there are so many success stories out there, and you offer them one of those success stories.
Women are afraid to ask for what they ask for a seat at the table, or more importantly, demand a seat at the table. So we generally wait to be asked, and when we're not, we think we don't deserve it. And so in basic words, we default to not good enough, rather than defaulting to, I need to put myself out there, I need to take a risk and ask and demand for what I want.
The SPD's private bar attorneys are essential to providing indigent defense in Wisconsin. The low rate of reimbursement is having a significant and in some places dire impact on the provision of representation in conflict of interest cases handled by our partners in the private bar. The $40 per hour rate is inadequate, and I am respectfully asking for your help in getting it increased.
I want to thank you for just the opportunity. I want to thank you for the friendship. I mean, I look around here, and I think I probably recognize 60 to 70% of your faces. We have done so much together for so long. I'm just so thankful. Thankful for the opportunity that you have placed in me, especially the people in the First District. Thankful for the chance to serve in this beautiful state, in this great, wonderful country. And thankful for having the chance to take this agenda, these things we believe in, and marshal them through into law and see the difference being made. And as I come full circle on this, I'm very grateful. I'm very proud. But at the end of the day, when your guy who's been there for 20 years and your kids are 13, 14, and 16, the thing I am most proud about is being a husband and being a dad.
So on behalf of not only the delegation here, but all of us in the state of Wisconsin, we want to say to Paul Ryan, who's been the congressman now for 2 decades in the 1st Congressional District, you're number one in our hearts. Thank you for being a great leader for America.
I want to lead the show with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling 6-3 that states can legalize sports betting. I went to the Ledge Council and I say, please give me a summary of our current prohibition. And here's what they said. The Wisconsin Constitution, Article 4, Section 24, legislature may not authorize gambling in any form subject to these exceptions, important exceptions. Bingo or raffle games operated by a religious, charitable, service, fraternal, or veterans organization, paramutual on-track betting. We all know, remember the dog tracks that opened, and do we have any now? Nope. State-operated lottery. However, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has acknowledged an exception for state tribal gaming compacts. Okay, JR, here's why I think this is worth leading the show. Now, A question for every candidate for governor, including incumbent Scott Walker, is do you support changing the Constitution to legalize sports betting? I think that's a big deal. I think their answers is a big deal. Number one. Number two, if you don't support that, what if the tribes say, we have this exception, allow us to conduct sports betting in our casinos in exchange for X amount of the take? So I think it's a big deal. Do you agree?
Maybe, but nothing's going to happen anytime soon. So to change the Constitution, you need an amendment to pass back-to-back legislatures, which is a minimum of the 1920 session and early 21. So the earliest you can see on the ballot would be spring of 2021. Mm-hmm. You have Governor Scott Walker, who opposed opening a casino in Kenosha County. Yeah. So any expansion of gaming under him is probably not going to happen. And then so the tribe is trying to renegotiate the compact. If it's Governor Walker negotiating it, I'm not sure they have a receptive audience for that. And as it sits right now, I mean, I talked to Todd Vorpegel this week, who pushed a bill to just clarify that fantasy sports were legal.
Right.
And he's like, doesn't change anything in his mind because of the compacts and Constitution. So I'm not sure in the immediate future it's a big deal. But maybe.
Potential dollars out there for the state when we won't raise taxes for highways, things like that. Potential dollars if the tribes, I'm going to pursue Plan B. The tribes come in and say, we know we have these forever compacts. However, if you let us conduct sports betting, we'll give you a larger percentage of the take. There's several zeros in what the state could get. So I think it's a big deal.
Possibly, but who's negotiating with the tribes? Governor Walker's already shown he's not interested in expanding gaming in Wisconsin. So would this, to him, count as an expansion? What were his conditions for Kenosha, remember? Like, it couldn't expand basically the footprint.
Right.
So would this expand the footprint? I think it would qualify to expand the footprint.
Okay, but let's listen to how the governor responded. It doesn't matter what I think on that. It's in the Constitution. It would take a change by the voters. He didn't say no.
No. So he didn't say no Kenosha up front either. But there was a suspicion or a thought in back when he turned down Kenosha that he was also thinking about primary voters in Iowa and other places like that, that this would not go well with him. So if Governor Walker, a lot of ifs. If he wins re-election this fall, if he's asked by the tribes to renegotiate the compact, and if he saw Harbor's interest in running for president someday, what's political calculation for him to do this?
But political reporters like us have to begin asking the question of candidates for governor, do you support amending the Constitution? What if the tribes wanted to rewrite their compacts? I think it's a big deal.
Possibly.
Okay. You want to bet $20 on whether the Brewers score first tonight?
I think it's Twins? Illegal right now, Steve.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Anyway, I just thought I'd ask. As of 9 a.m., let me get the number. 230,424 claims for rebate checks had been filed. And this is pretty effective politicking for the governor?
Sure. I think there's the original estimate was there were 671,000 households.
So one in three
eligible.
Have already applied. Excuse me.
They've got until July 2nd to do it.
Yeah.
There's an AP report pointed out that even some Democrats who opposed the tax credit were promoting how to go get it. I mean, you know, it's $100 per kid. You're not going to like turn down that money if it's there. Now, Governor Walker's out touring the state trying to push the idea of we have a surplus. This is giving it back to you. I mean, Walker's been very adamant about, you know, the investments they made, the Wisconsin comeback, you know, the Wisconsin dividend, that this is a result of the policies he's put in place. They're trying to get people excited about him from November. I mean, go back and look at his speech to convention last weekend. It was all about, we need you engaged. We need you excited. There is an enthusiasm issue Republicans are dealing with. It was apparent throughout convention last weekend. Everybody talked about what's at stake come November. We need you, activists, engaged and doing stuff. Governor Walker is going to spend the next 5 months of the election trying to get people excited about a third term of his policies. Now, you know, we haven't seen any polls from Marquette in a while to know where he's at, but you've seen other ones out there where he's been underwater. So where is he at right now? I'm not sure. But to him, this is a way to pitch, you know, hey, you're getting $100 because of what we did.
And this is a great time to listen to how the governor pitched and asked Wisconsin families to apply for the $100 per child rebate. At a Kohl's store in Sussex, notice the governor shed his usual coat and tie for, I think, a lovely plaid shirt. So let's listen to the governor.
Traveling the state of Wisconsin to draw attention to the fact that May 15th, today, is the first day that families all across the state can start to register online at childtax.org. childtaxrebate.wi.gov. That's childtaxrebate.wi.gov. We then had a larger than expected surplus, and so as I promised in the past, we'd send it back to the hardworking taxpayers of Wisconsin. It's been interesting to hear some of the cynics in the Capitol who say, you shouldn't give that money away. They want to spend it on anything else. Well, we want to send it back to you, the hardworking people of the state of Wisconsin. One of the easiest, most effective ways to do that is to send it back in a sales tax rebate, which this is. It's efficient and effective. It can go right out. It can have an impact not only on the economy at individual homes, it'll have a larger overall impact because in addition to these rebates going out $100 per child, the legislature also was great to join with us and pass a sales tax holiday for back-to-school items. Simple. The timing we were worried about was getting in people's hands before kids went back to school. If it was political, we'd have it come the week before the election. In this case, it's about schools. It's about kids going back to school and families having the resources. For us, this is one of the easiest, quickest ways to do that. Let's just be honest here. State Democrats, fill in the blank, they're opposed to whatever I'm for. But if you go ask everyday citizens across the state, do you think it's a good idea when the state has a bigger than expected surplus to send it back so that families have some extra money to spend on their kids before they go back to school to help with parents and grandparents offset that? I think regardless of party, not elected officials, but regardless of party by the voters, they'd say that's a pretty good deal.
In that segment, the governor said if this was political, those checks would be going out, you know, 5-7 days before the election. But when will they be going out, Jan?
They want them out before the August sales tax holiday. They included this kind of package, include the sales tax holiday where school supplies, computer stuff, you know, there's no sales tax on those and certain limits. I mean, but it is political a little bit. I mean, there's a reason why Governor Walker is doing this. Republicans went along with it because they want to show that their policies in their minds are working. And don't forget, I mean, you were here when it was passed, but in May of 2000,
yeah,
they sent back checks of $300 per taxpayer, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's close, yes.
Split control legislature back then. It's not done just because. It's done for a reason. And they want to get people to see that there's something good happening in Wisconsin. So there is a political aspect to it.
Okay, now I can't claim any of this for 9 grandchildren, but you could go to childtaxrebate.wi.gov. Mm-hmm. Is it hard?
No, I filled it out. I mean, I tested it, I mean, part because we have 2 kids, but also to see if it worked. That's one thing about government websites. You have to check and see if they work the first day. That's why I filled it out the first day. But yeah, it went through, clicked it, took less than 5-10 minutes, I think, to fill it out.
Okay. All right, moving on. The governor is playing offense now at the Republican State Convention in an interview with Mike Gushee on 2 issues. Mm-hmm. First, he's coming back on Foxconn. Let's read what he said. Excuse me. Democrats are going out of their way to say to forecast that if any one of them is elected governor, they want to find a way to cut Foxconn out of the deal. What other company in America, what other company in the world would consider coming to the state if that's the kind of leadership that's going to be in place? Before we get to the governor's comments on MPS, what he's saying there is you have to reelect me for this Foxconn deal, 10,000 to 13,000 jobs, $10 billion of investment in southeast Wisconsin. So he's beginning to draw the line, saying elect a Democrat, Foxconn dead.
It's another issue, another what's at risk. If you went through his convention speech, I mean, the last couple minutes were like this list of what's at risk. And he did a kind of a call and answer thing he likes to do where he said this thing, and they said gone, and this thing, gone. So this is a piece of that. You know, if you don't re-elect Republicans, then Foxconn goes away.
Yeah, okay. He also then is playing offense on Milwaukee Public Schools, something that they do every so often. I mean, Tommy, in May of 1998, had his own plan to take over. Anyway, here's what he said. In the Gushee interview, funding from the state is not the issue. And by the way, I looked it up in the Fiscal Bureau. I think the state is giving $553 million, which is half of 1 penny in the sales tax to MPS this year. But I go on. They have the ability to do any number of things. If they don't have a board and leadership willing to do those things, that's not something the state's responsibility for. It's theirs. If the state superintendent's not willing to do that, then I think there are probably other things we've got to look at. Maybe we shake things up. How severe a threat?
Well, it wasn't put in the budget last time.
Right.
It's coming up now when his leading Democratic opponent, in the polls at least, is a superintendent of schools. So there may be something about this that might be political, not to be cynical. But let's be honest. They've talked about breaking up MPS for how many years now?
30, 30 plus.
2000,
I looked it up.
2009, Governor Jim Doyle advocated
mayoral takeover.
Where'd that go?
Nowhere.
The problem has been, and then in the last budget on this one, they had the county executive proposal, right? A takeover czar,
Opportunity schools, yes.
What happened with that?
Commissioner. That fell apart.
No willing local partner. That's been the common theme that I've heard from some of these proposals, is that they could not find a willing local partner in MPS to do these things. So how do you make it work? If the state comes in and takes over the schools, which I'm not saying like or advocating against Governor Walker's suggestion, but if you do this, the question has been in years past, how do you get buy-in from locals to make it work?
Well, and I did a deep dive on some of these issues here, and the 2016-27 four-year graduation rate for MPS, 62%. The state average is 88%. That's 26 percentage point difference. And the state this year is paying about 80% of MPS total operating budget. Mm-hmm. But let's look at, because the governor called out Tony Evers, superintendent of public instruction, let's look at how Mr. Evers responded. Textbook Scott Walker, blaming others for his own mismanagement. MPS faces a real challenge, and Milwaukee kids need a governor that will help the district grow and evolve, not a dictator that wants to tear it down. How much damage, how tough an issue is this for Tony Evers?
Very tough. I mean, this is part of why governor was bringing up is Evers has been superintendent for, what, 8+ years?
He was reelected. He's elected 3 times.
So he's been superintendent for a long time. What's been the turnaround of MPS while he's been superintendent? This will be part of the argument. If Evers is the nominee, which is a big if, just yet, right? If he's the nominee, expect there to be every teacher who viewed porn at work and didn't lose his teaching license will be an issue.
Yep.
The record of places like Milwaukee Public Schools, that they've if they failed to improve, that'll be part of the record against Tony Evers. So this Governor Walker is taking what could be a very potent issue against Tony Evers if he's a Democratic nominee and laying down a marker about it. The thing, though, is, again, Governor Walker's been governor for 8 years. They've tried one thing, but they haven't moved to break up MPS until he's talking about it now. Why?
Right. No, that's true. And Mr. Evers sent out a fundraising solicitation mm-hmm. saying while he was Milwaukee County executive, Governor Scott Walker did nothing to help MPS. So, okay, so you consider that a very live issue if Evers is the Democratic nominee?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now let's talk about two primaries last week. In the special elections, let's talk about Senate District 1. Representative Andre Jacques won, the Republican nominee. He will be the Republican nominee. And the Democrat had no challenger, Caleb Frostman. What was the margin there, J.R.?
Like 300, 330 votes,
over
like that.
Over Alex Renard.
A 24-year-old guy who works at a family business in Green Bay, moved into the district not long before the election. Outside group, Midwest Growth Fund, got behind Renard, cast it as an outsider versus a career politician, and like hit Andre Jacques for, you know, being on the taxpayer's
dime. City payroll, then state payroll, then ledge payroll.
And now, you know, his per diems, everything. You know, this guy was somebody who's at the public trough. But in turnout like that, where you're talking like 10%, maybe 9%, something like that, of registered voters turning out, only the hardest core are going to get there. So, you know, Andre Jacques was outspent, I think, by a significant margin in that race. He didn't raise as much money as Renard did, didn't have outside groups, but he had the backing of anti-abortion groups, for example. There are folks who tend to turn out in low turnout races because they're motivated to go. So Andre also did very well in his assembly district. That was one of the keys. He ran up a big margin in his assembly district, which helped offset Renard's victories elsewhere.
I noticed in your newsletter, you asked Renard, are you going to run in November? What did he say?
His campaign manager said he's not decided yet. Now, why this is interesting is the filing deadline for the November election is June 1st. These races are June 12th. So let's say Renard doesn't do that. So Jacques and Frostman are going to run for both. If either candidate turns out to have a problem, a fatal flaw, we find out June 5th, which hurts him in the election June 12th, the party is stuck with that candidate through to November for the rematch.
Yeah.
It's also interesting to note that this could be a vastly different electorate in November than it is going to be in June. So we notice that Dems seem to be more motivated right now. We've seen that in the 10th Senate District,
yeah.
Supreme Court race. So they may be more motivated right now, but President Trump's numbers are getting better. The economy is doing fairly well. Might that then blunt the Democratic momentum by November, but it might still be a live all kinds of what-ifs right now.
Yeah. Okay, let's just take a little bit and talk about the primary in the Assembly 42nd District. Now, Speaker Voss told me at the Republican Convention, yeah, we backed John Plummer. He won. We thought he fit the district perfectly. But you had three other Republican candidates who didn't win, didn't have any GOP support. So no surprise that Plummer won?
No, he got like, what, 70% of the vote, something like 70.5. So, yeah. I mean, he... It's clear from the finance reports he had the backing of the GOP establishment. I mean, he got like $16,000 from fellow Republican or from sitting Republican members of the legislature, including Robin Voss. He was the one that was recruited and put in there because they thought he was the best bet to hold that seat.
Okay. Special election June 12 in Senate District 1, Assembly District 42. Now, J.R., we were both at the state GOP convention, and I was most intrigued by the pitches to the delegates from State Senator Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson. So before we talk about the endorsement and how that came out, let's listen to segments of the speeches from Senator Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson right now.
I'll tell you a bit about my story. It's going to tell you why I'm running for this office and why we're going to win it. Folks, I was born in Milwaukee. And have any of you ever heard that I used to be a Democrat? Anybody? People have been telling you about this? Let me tell you about it. I had to walk the path that I did to become the conservative I am today. Along the way, I became a husband, a father, a businessman. I was introduced to practicality, reality, the value of human life, innocent and otherwise. And I learned my obligations and my responsibilities, and that made me a conservative. I served from 2004 to 2009. I fought in Iraq in 2007. I fought in Afghanistan in 2008 and 2009. I will challenge the thought processes of those veterans who have served honorably but then consider voting for Democrats who undermine the same Constitution that they agreed to defend in uniform. I will challenge the thought processes of the parents of a kid on the north side of Milwaukee who want that kid to grow up with better education but consider voting for Tammy Baldwin as she fights against those educational options. I will challenge Tammy Baldwin on her failures on the Iran deal, her failure to address the national debt, her failure to help veterans that asked for her help at TOMA, her failure to forward tax cuts that sent money back to the families of Wisconsin, her failure, one, in launching Obamacare on the people of Wisconsin, but two, in trying to make it worse, her failure to address illegal immigration and instead try to forward it and be willing, actually, as she has been, to shut the federal government down in favor of illegal immigration. And I will challenge her on her failure to protect innocent life, because Tammy Baldwin is the extremist on abortion, not us. I will not bend, I will not break, and I will not pause until we take Tammy Baldwin out of the United States Senate and chart a new course for our nation's future.
You know my story. I am a nurse. I am a military mom. I am a proven, consistent conservative. And I want to be your voice in Washington. I will fight as the nurse who understands the complex issues facing our nation and healthcare reform, and we will repeal and replace Obamacare. I'll fight as a proud NRA member and gun owner and always protect our Second Amendment rights. I'll fight as that concerned mom was concerned about education, and I will make sure that you continue to have the choices and options as you know best how to take care of your children. I will fight as a daughter of Greek immigrants. We are a nation of laws, and I will stand with President Donald Trump as we build that wall and tackle this issue once and for all. And I will fight as a mother of a First Lieutenant United States Army Ranger to make certain that our military is strong. And as a woman of faith, you have my word that I will fight for the precious lives of the unborn. Together, we have worked to make Wisconsin great again. And now I am asking you to join me, and let's join President Donald Trump in truly making America great again.
Party rules said you had to get a 60% endorsement from the delegates at that convention. How did it go?
Louis Vuitton, we got 72.6%. Don't quote me on the decimal spot, but she cleared it easily. Now, you have to know about the endorsement vote. There are 5,400 roughly delegates allocated. The counties get the number of delegates based on their percentage they got or their turnout in the previous fall election, 2016, President Trump. So there were not 5,400 people in that room during the vote, but they're allocated based on the votes. And then, so if you have, if you are, your county gets 100 votes.
And there's only five people.
10 people show up, or five. 10 people show up.
Right.
They each count as 10 delegates in the vote. So you have to keep that in mind, because when you go through places like Waukesha County, where Vukmir is a big margin, it really boosted her quite a bit. So that's one thing to know about that. Two, I mean, Leah Vukmir basically staked her campaign on getting this endorsement vote. I mean, I'm not saying she would have had to drop out if she didn't get it, but she had clearly been gunning for this as a part of the strategy for her campaign, because she has trailed financially behind Kevin Nicholson. He's got polls have shown her behind him. The question now is, what she do with this endorsement? You know, what's the party going to do? So we've already seen this week, Leah went on a tour of victory centers, they call them. They're basically field offices where you turn people out, you know, make the phone calls and everything.
Right.
Did a tour of those, but what's next? Now, remember, the party has kind of put its neck out on this, right? They've tried to play up the idea of the endorsement being meaningful. Well, what will they do then to make sure it's meaningful? Oh, by the way, what happens if they go all in on Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson wins the nomination in August?
Yeah.
How's that going to work? I mean, there's all kinds of, like, canned worms there.
But all the Republicans who hinted that Nicholson should get out losing this endorsement, he's not getting out.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, Nicholson has been ahead of the polls. He's got outside national support financially. Unless that financial support turns off, he's going to stay in. Now, the question for that both is, how are you going to run this race between now and August? Because we saw in 2012 a bruising primary that resulted in Tommy Thompson being broken, battered the day after and losing to Tammy Baldwin.
And there was no endorsement at that 2012 GOP convention.
If these guys, because there's not much daylight between them on policy, right? It's big substance and style.
Okay.
Races like that turn out to be fairly negative. And oh, by the way, a little post note, I saw last night an interview in the Washington Post with Mitch McConnell, talked about nine states that the U.S. Senate race, the battle for control, run through. Wisconsin was not one of them.
Was not on them. Yeah, I saw that neither on CNN this morning.
Neither was Ohio or Pennsylvania.
Right.
And by the way, McConnell said credible candidates could develop in Ohio and Pennsylvania. I'm not sure what Wiesel said about Wisconsin that wasn't the story. But
I was surprised.
Noteworthy that we were not on the list of nine states that were key.
Okay, time's getting away from us, JR. Let's look at three people who made political decisions this week. Representative Peter Barkas, as a Democrat, he will not run for the first U.S. House, will not seek Ryan's seat, no surprise there.
Kind of came to the conclusion we thought he would eventually, because he's so far behind financially, fundraising-wise, Randy Bryce and Kathy Myers, hard to catch up.
Ed Brooks, because let's wish him well, he's fighting leukemia, won't seek re-election. And you and I were not surprised that Mike Crute, the devil's advocate, not running for governor as a Democrat.
I think he made it, what, 3.5 weeks in the race?
Well, you can even argue whether it was a race. Okay, let's turn to your stock picks.
So Michael Brennan Rising, sworn in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, confirmed on a pretty much a party line vote last week. This fills a vacancy that had been there since 2010 when Terrence Evans took senior status and passed away the next year. What's interesting politically about this is, will it play a role in the U.S. Senate race? Because Republicans are trying to make a big deal about Tammy Baldwin voting against him, not turning her blue slip on Brennan. I don't think the average voter cares about this kind of stuff.
I agree. Completely agree.
You need to motivate Trump voters to turn out in November if you're a Republican. Maybe you can use this to get some of the Trump voters out because they're happy with Trump and the judicial nominees he's putting out there. Yeah. Maybe helps them, but I don't think it's going to decide the race come November.
Next.
The GOP establishment, so they wanted Plummer to get through in the 42nd.
They got that.
They were worried about Andre Jacques in the first because the perception is that Andre is more conservative in that district. He's not a strong fundraiser. Therefore, it'll be harder for him to hold the seat than somebody else. Now, we saw he won by 300-some votes in the primary. The question becomes, okay, does he get outside support now at the June election? How is this going to work? It's going to be interesting to watch that play out. And Dems like Caleb Frostman. They think he's a good fit for the district.
Yep.
Former director of the executive director of the Economic Development Corporation up
former
there.
Former director, yep.
Got a background in hunting and fishing, that kind of stuff. So they like their chances up there.
And your falling is good news for Wisconsin. Explain.
Opioid prescriptions, the governor announces they're down 10% last quarter versus the first quarter of the year before.
Yep.
Look, this is a good trend. One of the many ways we're trying to fight opioid problems in Wisconsin is prescriptions, reducing how much they're sent out. There's also a political aspect to this. Governor Walker's second ad was about what in this race? drug opioid problems.
Yeah, he's got a very real picture of one family that was devastated by
Brad Schimmel's first digital ad in this race is about what?
Opioid addiction.
There's a reason.
Progress.
They need to show progress on this. This is a potent issue politically come November.
Okay, good call. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 18.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.